So we are slowly moving through Shmuel, Book of Samuel, the Book of Shmuel. We're in the first chapter still. It's right at the beginning of the story. And we got as far as basically verse 6, 7, around there. So we have that Elkanah, who has two wives, Penina and Hannah. And Penina has children, and Hannah does not have any children. And Hannah would like children, but she has been unable to give birth to any children thus far. And every year they come to the Mishkan, to the tabernacle, to the temple, and on the holidays, and they bring their sacrifices, and they eat the meat, and the Pasuk in Pasuk Vav, verse 6, describes V'chiasata tzarasa gam ka'as b'avor har'ima, that her tzara, that the sister wife of Hannah, Penina, would anger her and try to rile her up. We gave some examples last time of what she would say to her. But she would try to deliberately make her angry, apparently. Ki sagar Hashem be'ad rachma, the verse concludes, because God had closed her womb, God had closed Hannah's womb. And the sages tell us, Chazal say, that when Penina tried to anger Hannah, it was l'shem shamayim niskavna. If she did it for the sake of heaven, she was trying to encourage her, to get her to daven, to pray harder in order to have children. And pasuk zayin, v'chein yaseh shana v'shana, and so he would do each year, midei alosa b'veis Hashem, when he would go up to the house of God, kein tachisena, so he would make her angry, batifke v'losochal, and she would cry, and she wouldn't eat. So basically, Elkanah would give them food, and Penina would get Hannah angry, and she would cry, Hannah would cry, and she wouldn't eat. Vayomer la Elkanah isha, and Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, lama sivki, Hannah, why do you cry? V'lama lo sochli, and why don't you eat? V'lama yeira levavich, and why is your heart saddened? Halo anochi tovlach me'asara banim, behold, I am better than for you than 10 children. And he was implying Penina had 10 children, and Elkanah says, I'm better for you than the 10 children that Penina had. So I think we mentioned briefly in passing last week that the part of the whole conversation going on here, right? The question was asked, why would Hannah get so upset because somebody teased her? You know, we're talking about this great woman, Hannah, this tzaddikus, this righteous individual. And why would she be so shaken up by just a little teasing from Penina? And we said our first answer was because, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, anybody could be affected by teasing. It's hard to, you know, if somebody speaks in such a way to anyone, even the person who's on the highest level and knows how to ignore things and knows how to move past things, but still, it affects you. But we also said that Rabbi Yonasan Eifshit suggests that that Penina was digging at Hannah on a not only just like in, you know, practical terms and physical terms, but also in terms of her spiritual growth, spiritual reward. And what she was telling her was that the Gemara tells us that a woman's merit comes from either sending her children to the base to school, to base medrash, to learn, or her husband, and waiting upon their return. And Penina was saying, you don't have any children, you don't have opportunity for this merit. And Hannah was very saddened by this. And Elkanah responded, don't worry, because you're married to me, and I'm righteous. And he wasn't boasting, but he was telling her that, you know, you have opportunity for merit also by supporting, being supportive of me and awaiting my return from Torah study. And that's what he was telling her. Hallo, Anochi Tovloch me'asar abanim. I'm better than 10 children because of this. Now, Penina, we see here, this verse teaches us that Penina had 10 children. Now, at the beginning of the next chapter, Chana is going to daven, she's going to have a tefillah or a shira, and she's going to say as follows. Pasuk Hey of Parak Beis, chapter 2, verse 5, she says, Sveim balechem niskaru. Those who are satisfied with bread will earn. Ure'evim chadelu, and those who are starving will stop. One second. Sorry, what it means is, Sveim balechem niskaru, those who were previously satisfied because they had, will be niskaru, they'll have to hire themselves out because they will become poor. And re'evim chadelu, and those who are starving will stop starving. And what she meant was that the one who had a lot, Penina, who had many children, she ended up, she lost many of her, a number of her children. And when we get there, we'll go through the exact calculation. And Chana, who didn't have children, eventually, Akara Yalda Shiva, it's going to say the barren one gave birth to 7. We'll see, it may not be that she actually had 7, maybe 5, but we'll see when we get there. But basically, Penina ends up losing her children, and Chana ends up having numerous children. And it seems that in some way Penina was being punished for her actions, and she lost her children. And the question is that if Penina, when she was angering Chana, when she was teasing Chana, was doing it l'shem shamayim, she was doing it for the sake of heaven, she wanted Chana to pray. And it worked, and it got Chana to pray, and Chana had children as a result. So why was she punished for this? Why was she punished if it was, she did it with good intentions, and it even played out well? So, on this idea, on this question, Chaim Shmulevitz lays down a yesod, a foundational idea, about relationships, being all the machaveiro between man and his fellow. And what he says is that you see from here that the term that he uses is that a sin, a grievance between a person and his friend, or a woman and her friend, between man and his fellow, is he calls it eshel chelitz. It's fire that consumes it. The punishment is automatic. There's no. It doesn't matter if you have good intentions. It doesn't really matter if you are hurting another individual. Then a person will face punishment for that. He brings a proof to this idea from a Gemara. The Gemara says that, the way he sets it up, by the way, he says Penina was a tzaddikah, she was righteous, and it was certainly difficult for her to put Chana in pain, but she was doing it, l'shem shamayim, she was doing it for the sake of heaven, and yet we see that she's punished for it. There's a Gemara that has a story with Rav Ruchumi. Rav Ruchumi would go off to learn in the yeshiva, and he would come home every year on Erev Yom Kippur. Could be he would come home a different time also, but he would come home Erev Yom Kippur every year. And his wife would await his return, so excited to see him back. And one year he delayed in coming back. He was learning. He got caught up in his learning, caught up in a discussion. And what happened? And his wife was waiting. And she was waiting and she was waiting. And eventually she gave up. He wasn't coming. And she cried one tear. And at that moment, Rav Ruchumi, who was sitting in the yeshiva, apparently on a second story, that the Gemara says the floor caved in and he fell to his death at that moment. And it's a shocking story. But the lesson that you see now, that Rav Chaim Shmulevitz points out, is that, you know, this is not helping her, that she just lost her husband completely, right? He was, she was waiting for him to come home. Now he's never going to come home. That's not helping her, right? So why is that, how does that work? Why is that the punishment? Why does that happen? So he says, because it's not so much about, you know, the punishment isn't in order to, you know, for her sake necessarily. It's this concept that a person hurts his friend, eishel chelis, fire, you know, consumes. It's not necessarily, maybe to use the word rational. It's automatic. A bingado mechaveru is that severe. The concept is that, you know, somebody has been hurt. So if you do a sin that's, let's say, being adam or makom, between man and God, right? A person eats on Yom Kippur, right? So that's, you know, God's decision whether, you know, what the how to react towards that, how to punish, whether, you know, that happens to carry a certain punishment. But in general, right, God can decide to forgive or not to forgive. But when it comes to being Adam and Chavero, man and his friend, so that's, you know, not God's decision whether to forgive that. The idea comes out, actually, this idea was discussed earlier. I saw quoted from a sefer that I had not heard of before, but from a sefer, I had never heard of the sefer even. Sefer is called Gan Rava. It's on Al Torah. It's on the Chumash, on the weekly parsha, and he's discussing a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, and it's talking about when a person hurts his friend, and it says there that. That anosa aneo so, if you cause him to suffer, the pasuk says, when he cries out to me, shamoa eshma tzakoso, I will listen to his cry. And the way that the pasuk says it, the way the verse says it, is interesting. It says, imanosa aneo so, if you cause him to suffer, ki imtzao ki tzakelai. And it has this word ki, which usually means like because, it could mean when sometimes. And that's the question that the Gan Rava is asking. Why does it use this word ki? Because it should have said if. It says ki im. It says like because if, or it should have just said imanosa aneoso, if you cause him to suffer, if he cries out to me, I'll listen to his tefillah. Why does it say ki'im? Because if. So he says that what it's hinting to is this idea. And he actually references directly our discussion about Penina and Chana, the same discussion that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz was having, that he says, Chazal say that Penina had good intentions, she was L'shem Shamayim Niskavna, she was doing it for the sake of heaven, and yet we find that she was punished. And the question is why? He says, what we have to say is that it's forbidden for someone to cause pain to another person, even when you have good intentions. Still, even if it's L'shem Shamayim, it's for the sake of heaven, it's still forbidden. And he says it's hinted to in this pasuk. Imano sanel so, if he will cause his friend to suffer, ki imtaoki takelai, meaning, even if the purpose of doing it is key, because in order to cause the person to tsaok tzakilai, to cause the person to daven, which is exactly what Penina was doing. Penina was anosaneh. She was causing Chana to suffer ki im tzaok tzakilai, in order that the in order that Chana should cry out. But still, God says, the verse concludes, Shamoa eshma ta'akaso, I'm going to listen to his cry. And the verse ends, I believe I was trying to find the pasuk, but doesn't actually tell you where it is here. Did you find it? Do you know where it is? I mean, it's in Mishpatim. It's just a question of where. I found the other one. Shamat ki tzakelai, shamat ki chananani. That's a different one. Can you find it? No. Okay. So I was, but the end of the verse says that, you know, and he'll cry out to me, and I will exact punishment. And he says it's exactly what we're saying over here. It's actually the idea of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, that if you cause him to pay in order, that he'll cry out to me. Still, God says, I'll listen to his cry. As soon as that person cries out, as soon as the wife of Rav Ruchumi shed that tear, as soon as she cried out, so then God acted. Now, yeah. So that's the idea that comes out. Again, we're not necessarily going to see that every time we do something on our level. We're not necessarily going to see, you know, and we don't want to see punishments like that. But the lesson is here for us. The lesson is to be taken is the importance of how we behave towards our fellow, towards other people. And to understand that even if we have good intentions, we still can't wrong them. We still can't do something that's not nice, teasing or speaking badly towards a friend, towards someone in such a way that it will cause them hurt. Okay, let's keep going. So, as I mentioned, Chana indeed responds. And Chana got up after she had eaten, after she had drunk. So she ended up, seems she ended up having something to at first she wasn't eager to drink, but then she ended. After Elkanah said, why are you crying? Why aren't you eating? So then she had something. She got up. And Eli, the Kohen, the high priest, was sitting on a chair by the doorway of the Heichal of Hashem of the Mishkan. V'hi maras nafesh, and she was very bitter. Vatisbalel al Hashem, and she davened al Hashem. She davened on Hashem, on God. Whatever, we'll have to see what that means. So let's say for now she davened to God. Uvacho sivke, and she was crying. So the Malbim here kind of sets up what was going on here. The Malbim says that until now, she had been relying on her husband to daven on her behalf for children. And at this moment, when he said, you know, I'm better than you for you than 10 children, she saw in him that he seemed to be, you know, giving up on having children from her. He said, you know, let's be happy with our current situation. I'm as good as 10 children. And she saw that he had basically given up. And she said, okay, then I'm going to have to take this into my own hands. And she gets up and she's gonna go diving on her own. So
not just McLucas of
so she listens to her sister.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting that you bring that up, because according to this little point, it sounds almost like it wasn't necessarily, if you take this approach, which is the Malbim, one of the commentators, you know, suggests this, then it somewhat implies that she wasn't reacting because of her sister. If we say that the reason why she went to diving now was because she saw that her husband had given up, up until now, she had been relying on her husband, and now she saw that he had given up, so now she went to diving on her own. So then, according to that, then the impetus to diving wasn't really her sister, it was really her husband giving up. So that's just an interesting point that comes out if you take this idea of the Malbim. So she goes, she's bitter, and she davens on Hashem, and she was crying. So the Gemara talks about this this lashon, this language that he uses, that she davened on Hashem. And the Gemara says that Chana hiticha dvarim klapei mala. Chana was, we'll have to define what this is, hiticha dvarim towards heaven. What does it mean? So the way the Maharsha learns, at least in one approach, is that it means that she presented a winning argument towards God. And what would that refer to? So the next pasuk says, "Vatidor neder," and she took an oath, "Vatomar," and she said, "Hashem tzivakos." God of regions, Imra'o Tire Ba'ani Amasecha, if you'll surely see your poor maidservant Uzichartani, and you'll remember Vugosishkachas Amasecha, and you won't forget your maidservant, Vinasatala Amascha Zera Anashim, and you'll give to your maidservant seed of children, unisativ la Hashem, and I'll give it to God, give him to God, kol yemei chayav, all the days of his life, umara lo yala al rosho, and we'll say for now that that means that a razor won't go upon his head. So I'm not going to get too into this verse yet. There's a lot to talk about on this pasuk, Yod Aleph, tremendous amount. But she basically says that, you know, if you'll see my difficulties, and you'll remember me, and you'll give me children, and I'll give them to Hashem all the days of my, I'll give him to Hashem all the days of my of his life, and seemingly she's saying, and he'll be a Nazir, a Nazirite, he won't ever cut his hair. So, but just coming back now to, so the Gemara, the Gemara offers different approaches to what she was saying. And just have to find what I'm looking for here.
There is one of the most remarkable statements in Jewish thought I've ever seen.
Doesn't that function in some ways, prayer?
It could. Right, I mean, it depends what the intent is. I would have to go through the Malbim carefully to see if he points out specific instances. Otherwise, maybe it's just an assumption that he would have done that.
Secretly involved in Shabbat Tzvi. He felt it was he spent much of his career ferreting them out, rooting them out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We have to look carefully.
That were Shabbat Tzvi related. The most famous one.
Apologize. So,
that
So maybe we'll start that Chana says, she refers in this pasuk to Vatomer Hashem Tzevakos. She refers to God as the God of legions. And the Gemara says that there was nobody who ever called her, who called Hashem the God of legions before this point. Now, you pointed out last week that earlier in the chapter refers to to Hashem as the God of legions. So the Mefarshim are aware of that, the commentators, and they say, well, but she was the first one to speak in that manner. I would add that the book of Shmuel is written by Shmuel, when he's older. So it could be that in the context of when he's describing his mother's prayer, and she used the word Hashem Tzevakos, that may explain why in the beginning of the chapter he, in the narrative, used that term. Perhaps. I didn't see anyone who says that, but that would make sense to me. But she uses this term Hashem Tzevakos. And the Gemara points out she was the first one. What was she saying? So the Gemara says she was saying as follows, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the World, of all the legions that you've created, is it so difficult to give me one child? You've created so many people, angels, all sorts of creatures. Is it so hard to give me one child? Gemara gives a mashal, a parable. L'ma adav or dome, what is this similar to? To a human king, a king who makes a very large meal for his servants, and a certain poor person comes and stands on the door, and he says, "Could you give me just one piece? Just one piece?" And they don't listen. So he manages to make his way into the king, and he says, "Master, king, my king, from this whole meal that you've created all this good. You've made this massive feast for all the people of the your palace. Is it so hard for you to give me one little piece?" The Gemara says that was her, that was what she meant when she invoked this name, Hashem Tzevakos. She was saying, "You're the God of legions. You've created so many creations. Is it so hard for you to give me just one child?" Elsewhere here, this is what I was actually looking for. This is what the Maharsha quotes, but I can't find it. She says that here it is. Okay. Later in the, it's gonna say in a couple pesukim from now, pasuk yigimel v'chana he medaberes aliba. Chana was speaking on her heart, about her heart. And what does that mean? So the Gemara says that what she was saying was, she said to Hashem, this was part of her tefillah, "Master of the world, all of the, everything that you've created in a woman was for a purpose. Eyes to see, ears to listen, a nose to smell, a mouth to speak, hands to work, to prepare things, feet in order to walk, and breasts in order to nurse." And she said, "Why have you given me these breasts? I don't have a child to nurse." And that was her taina. That was her claim. That's batidor. That was himidaberes aliba. She spoke about her heart. She spoke about her chest. She spoke about that she. Why have you given me this? If not to nurse a child, and that was part of her tefillah that Hashem should give her a child. So these were what the Maharsha calls winning arguments. And that's what it means. Yiticha dvarim klapei mala. She cast words towards the heavens. But that's a term, as the Maharsha understands it, that means that she was expressing a winning argument. Now, it seems like a somewhat aggressive approach to tefillah, and perhaps, you know, you could wonder why this was accepted. Why was this acceptable? And why wasn't she punished in some way for this? It seems that it was totally fine. So the Iyun Yaakov says over here that the pasuk itself explains that. The pasuk says, "Vimaras nefesh." She was very bitter. She was so sad. She was in such distraught. And he says that there's a concept that "Ein adam nitvas al tzaro." A person isn't grabbed. A person isn't punished, I guess, for their pain, or for something that comes from such pain. And he brings a proof from that, from something in Eov. And he says in the first place, why would the sages understand that Hisbalo Lam Hashem in this fashion, in a negative fashion? In general, when we look at tzaddikim, at the righteous, so we don't, if we have different ways of interpreting something, we'll try to interpret it in a positive light. And why, you know, of all the things they could have said about Vatispalo al Hashem, why did they understand it that she was hiticha dvarim kape mala, that she was like aggressively attacking in her prayer? So he says it's only because of her situation, that she was maras nefesh, that she was bitter, that they would interpret it that way, because then it's still acceptable. In a person in such distraught, so this is acceptable to do that. Now, yeah.
So she was bitter. She was in so much pain. So didn't prayer relieve the pain? Like
I think that certainly
when you're grieving on a loss,
right?
The only hope you have is prayer and God.
Prayer, yes. Turning to God.
That relieves the pain.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, that's absolutely true, but there's different levels of that, how much it can help. And there's also different kinds of pain, where hers was ongoing, where, you know, she was every year hoping that she would have a child, and it was like this ongoing trial for her. And she was being, you know, pushed by her sister wife, by Penina. You know, the whole situation, you know, was sort of like, and you know, she had Penina's children there, and she didn't have children, and it was...
But she lost her children.
She had not had children yet.
Penina,
oh, eventually, but not at this point, but later.
But so, only ask one question here, and I'll be quiet.
You can ask questions.
What her sister did, she lost her children from the way she acted. So on Earth, the way our children, I mean, like, if some son does something bad on Earth, do the parents suffer from their children? In heaven or wherever on Earth,
it's a very good question. I would turn that question around a little bit. Here it was sort of the opposite. Right. The question is, why should the children suffer as a result? Okay. So that's a very, very good question. And I don't have a definite answer. But what we could say, it's possible that they themselves weren't righteous on their own. We don't know, but we can speculate that maybe that they also, in some way, on their own, did something to deserve that punishment. And, right, they weren't necessarily little children that we're talking about. They could have been adult children already. It could be, but, you know, these are very... Right. So these are all very difficult questions to know. I don't know. But
if you don't know about them, what about the punishment to the father by losing his children?
Right. Yeah.
Anything was amiss with it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to really interpret, you know, God's choices. And I can't really comment on why everyone deserved what happened. But God, yeah. Right. No, they're very good questions. They're important questions. So, the What's interesting about this Gemara is that there's other people that are mentioned in context of hiticha dvarim klape mala, that they cast words towards the heavens. And one of them is Moshe, that there it actually says, Vayispalel el Hashem, and he davened to God. And the sages say, don't read it to, rather read it on. And they say, to teach you that he was hiticha dvarim klape mala, that he also cast words towards the heavens. And there the question becomes extremely, you know, much more glaring. Like, why would they reinterpret it, especially if this is something that's negative, to do this, whatever this exactly means, to cast words towards the heavens, to daven in an aggressive manner, let's call it. Why would they reinterpret the verse which says that Moshe davened to Hashem and interpret it as, and he davened on Hashem, in the same way that it says it by Chana? So, and I don't, you know, so the Nefesh HaChaim, Reb Chaim Volozhin, has a different approach in explaining what it means, hiticha dvarim klape mala, to cast words aggressively towards the heavens, or what the purpose of that is. And he says that there's a concept that when a person suffers, so God suffers as well. What, you know, how we understand exactly what it means that God suffers, you know, it's not, God doesn't actually suffer, but in the system that God created in this world, that's something that we would perceive, that we are supposed to perceive as God suffering when we suffer. And really, God would like everything to be good for us. But sometimes we don't deserve it. So the Nefesh HaChaim says that a very high level of prayer, in a way the ultimate level of prayer, is that when a person prays for suffering to end, or pain to stop, or someone to get better, that they shouldn't be davening for themselves. That, you know, my suffering should go away. The ultimate level of prayer is, God, your suffering should go away, and put themselves aside, and say, and really get to the sort of the root, and say, you know, I would like the pain, you know, God, I'm davening so hard so that your pain should go away, and that's how he interprets this verse, this idea of hiticha dvarim klape mala, that she aggressively cast words towards the heavens, that she davened so hard. Al Hashem, on God, she daven on behalf of God, that God, you know, I have pain, but you have pain also, and I would like to see your pain cease. And that's the same by Moshe Rabbeinu, when we find that he also davened Al Hashem, on God. It was also that he wanted God's pain to cease. Fine. If both sides are represented, and the other, yeah.
Did her sister and her children-in-law, did she reach back for forgiveness?
I imagine, but I don't know if it's mentioned explicitly. I don't think it says it explicitly, but there's a lot that it doesn't say. So, one other idea that sort of, that just a very simple idea in terms of what this could mean about the Spala Hashem, that I saw, she davened on God, is that talking about how high her prayer reached. That it reached like the you know, the highest heavens, her prayer. It was Al Hashem, it was over God, it was all the way up, you know, in the highest heavens. That's where her prayer was able to reach. And then she says, back to Pasuk Yigalf, the next verse, Vatidor Neder, and she took an oath, Vatomar, and she said, Hashem Tzevakos, God of legions, Imra'o tireh va'ani amasecha. If you'll surely see the pain of your maidservant. So here again, the Gemara interprets her words in a very interesting way. Imra'o tireh. The Gemara says that what she was saying was as follows. Ribono shel olam, Master of the world, Imra'o. If you see my merit, if you see that I deserve children, good. And if you don't see my merit, tir'eh, then you will see a reason to provide children for me. And that is, Eilech ve'estater b'fnei Elkanah bali v'yakanevi. Fascinating idea. She says, I'm going to go and I'm going to seclude myself with another man in front of my husband, v'yashkeni me sota, and he'll make me drink the waters of the sota. And you don't want to make your Torah a lie. Shenamar, and it says, "V'niksan." If she's clean, v'nizra zera, then she'll give birth to a seed. So there's a concept in the Torah of sota. A sota is a woman who is secluded with another man. Her husband warns her, "Please don't be alone with him." She goes and she does it again, and there are witnesses that she was alone with another man. So then the question becomes, did she actually sin with this other man? So the husband takes her up to the Beis HaMikdash, and she there's a whole process where she drinks this water given by the Kohen. It has the name of God erased inside of it, and she drinks it, and if she was indeed guilty with the other man, then she dies. Good. And if not, the Pasuk says, V'nixa, V'nizra Zera, she becomes pregnant. So Hannah said, God, if you don't give me a child, I will go seclude myself with a man. I'll be innocent. My husband will warn me. And then I'll go drink the mesota. And I will, that's how I'm going to get myself a child. And
she was a clever fox.
Yes. Now, there's a lot of discussion, a tremendous amount of discussion about this. How could she do that? How could she even, you know, how would she be allowed to do that? You're not allowed to have yichud to be alone with a man. That itself is forbidding for a woman to be in a room with a man who's not her husband in most situations, or in many situations. So how could she have done that? So the Mefarshim talk about different ways that it would be permitted. But one idea that comes out of the commentators was that she wasn't saying that she was actually going to do this, but she was just saying that, you know, like, I have a way, you know, to do this, so, almost like a migu, like, I could do it, so, you know, God, you should, that's not how they present it, but she was saying that there is a way for me to get a child, like, and please, you know, please give me a child without me having to do this. But she never really meant that that she was actually going to do it.
Don't make me this desperate. Don't make me this desperate, she said.
That's her. But she came pregnant.
Yeah, she didn't do it.
She didn't come to adultery, but she came
pregnant. Right, but she didn't even have to, she didn't end up having to, this is just her prayer that she was saying, you know, I will do this if I need to, but she didn't need to. She ended up just becoming pregnant without that.
Her previous husband, you said he had 10 kids?
He had 10 kids from his other wife.
Right, she was pure. He wasn't. Is there another reason?
What do you mean? Oh, no.